I'm Jamie.
And I'm Beth. Welcome to Thief Steals the Podcast.
Where I steal the podcast.
And I steal it back.
Okie dokie. Today we are talking about 5-10, the frame-up job. I'm almost nervous to ask because I do really love this episode. But Beth, what did you think?
Okay. I'm glad that you really liked this episode. Mm-hmm. I thought this episode was fine. I liked it a lot better than last week's episode. Yeah. But I really miss the team dynamic.
Yeah.
I love Sterling. Mm-hmm. Icon, as always. Yeah. Love Mark Shepherd appearance. You know, can't fault him. Mm-hmm. And I really liked seeing what names Sophie were up to. But there's just something about the dynamics being different when it's not the whole team together. Yeah. Like, there's something about, like, Nate and Sophie being, like, without their sort of metaphorical children.
Yeah.
Like, that just, it's a different energy. Not that it's necessarily a bad energy. Mm-hmm. It's just, like, not what I'm used to.
Yeah.
And so it's actually, if anything, this episode has made me, I haven't really had any, like, formalized opinions on, like, what I think the, like, reboot is going to be like. These last two episodes have made me nervous about what I'm going to think of the reboot. Purely because I think that the thing that is really tripping me up is that I love this cast as a cohesive unit. And, you know, when we have episodes like The Broken Wing Job where it gets broken up a little bit, but sort of like they're all kind of still there interacting and stuff, you know, I think it's less noticeable.
Even like the girls' night out, boys' night in.
Yeah, or like combos. even when Sophie was away for a lot of season two for like Gina Bellman's pregnancy and stuff, like because we still had touching base and we were still referencing the other characters, like it doesn't feel as removed.
Yeah.
These two episodes, I did much prefer this week's over last week's. I will say that, like, no contest. I enjoyed this week's episode, whereas I pretty much didn't enjoy last week's. But I still felt like something was off. Like, I felt like Nate and Sophie didn't 100% feel like Nate and Sophie, you know? And I think that that's just, in this particular instance, I think that's a case of they didn't have their kids around.
I think it's like they're in holiday mode.
They're like, essentially on their honeymoon.
They're like kids are away. We can actually be funny, silly, goofy like we want to be.
It wasn't like, even that. For me, I was like, there's a lot more like physical intimacy than normal. Yeah. Like a lot more kissing, a lot more like heavier flirting. This is not a bad thing. No. And I do actually enjoy seeing like older adults being able to explore that romance because you don't see it very often. And I say older adults, like, they're in their fucking, they're middle age, you know, but, like, they are able to explore this, you know, in a way that I don't think we see a lot in media, or at least I don't see it a lot. It seems to mostly be focused on younger people, and, like, that's great and all, but it's not, like, old people. Like, again, old people, like, they're not old. This is the thing. They're, like, literally, what, like, 40?
I think,
like,
yeah, they're around the 40-ish mark.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, they're not even, they are just adults, you know? And I think that there is, like, this tendency in particularly, like, the film industry to look at anyone over the age of 30 and consider them an old person, quote unquote.
Which is one of the reasons
particularly women.
Yeah, which is one of the reasons why I really love what they do with Sophie and Gina Bellman's character in that they let her be her age.
Yeah.
But they also let her be the most attractive person in the room at any given time.
Yeah.
Like, they're, those two things are not mutually exclusive. She's allowed to be the hottest person in the room that everybody, and be
also over 35.
And also over 35. Like, they let her be not trying to be mid-20s, but they also let her be so attractive and desirable that men will literally fucking lose their minds over her.
Yeah, they will literally lose everything over her.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's very nice to see them fleshing out this romance between two more mature characters. I think it's nice. And I think it's a nice balance between, like, Parker and Hardison, Nate and Sophie. Like, you get kind of sort of two different ends of a spectrum. Like, you've got Parker and Hardison who are, like, very new to this kind of, like, romance and, like, oh, you know, we've never really necessarily had a serious romantic partner before. And you've got Nate and Sophie who have clearly had more experience and, like, clearly have dated people and broken up and yada yada. And now they're, like, settling down as they're older and being, like, we have no disillusions.
Yeah.
We both have baggage. We're, you know, and it's, I think it's nice. And it, as much as Leverage is not, like, a realistic depiction of life, I do think that it is a nice depiction of love at an older age.
Yes.
Anyway, that is not what my point was going to be. Mm-hmm. My point is that I really miss the dynamic of the team.
Yeah.
And as much as I love Sterling and I love, you know, the petty banter between the three of them, this episode just didn't really feel like Leverage. Mm-hmm. And, like, not as much as last week's didn't, but I missed that vibe. And so I'm glad that you really liked this episode because I want to hear your reasoning.
A bit like last week, really liking this episode is actually probably a hotter take in fandom than disliking it. It is one that I've seen a lot of hate for, and the reason that I really like it is for no reason other than I think it's so fucking fun. I think it's just, sometimes I just want to see my characters be happy and have fun. And I understand, like, the dynamics of the team are one of the real, like, that's the thing that draws you into this show. Like, if you're going to be a fan of Leverage, it's because you like the team. Mm. It's because you like the dynamics with the team. And it's, like, you are certainly missing the dynamics of, you know, Parker Hardison and Elliot this week. But at the end of the day, like, I just think getting to see how the dynamics of, like, Nate, Sophie change without the other three is really interesting. And I also think the fact that they bring Sterling in for this episode specifically is just so fucking funny. And the fact that basically Nate and Sophie are just third wheeling him this entire time. Like, theoretically, he could throw them both in jail. Like, if he really wanted to, he could throw both of them in jail.
But for being annoying. That line, I laughed a lot. I was like, that is, I have never related more because I would be thrown in jail for being annoying.
But, you know, and at the, like, we still get to see, like, I feel like sometimes Nate and Sophie get given the disservice of not really being given a personality. I think this is especially true of Nate in the earlier seasons in which, and I said it then and I stand by it, sometimes Nate is only interesting by association. Nate is not interesting inherently by himself. Nate is interesting because of the way he relates to other people.
I disagree with that. Yeah. Not like strongly, but I think I do disagree. I think Nate is a very interesting character, but I think in the earlier seasons, it's hard to care.
Yes.
Because he's so annoying.
Yeah.
Like, Nate in early seasons, I think, is a fascinating character, especially from like a study in grief.
Yeah.
And like coping and sort of like obviously addiction as well. I think he's a very, very fascinating character. But I also just think it's really hard to care because he is so infuriating.
Yeah.
It's sort of one of those things. I've read a book series recently that I was recommended, and there's this character who one of the later books is sort of focused from her POV. And there's this whole thing about how like she is heavily traumatized because of this war. And, you know, I think it's, you know, her, obviously her behavior has been changed by the fact that she's heavily traumatized. And so she's treating people around her very poorly, but you're getting her perspective. And I think it's supposed to sort of inspire some empathy for her.
Yeah.
But the problem was, before the war, she was also a fucking just the worst. She was so mean and horrible all the time. She did a bunch of weird shit for no fucking reason other than she's just kind of a shitty person. And like, I was like, I don't care that you're now, like, it's really hard for me to be like, oh, I empathize with your trauma and like understand why that's causing you to lash out, because you were lashing out before the trauma. Like, you were just kind of always like that. And now you just have, like, now you have a reason.
Yeah.
Like, now it makes sense that you would lash out because you are dealing with this, you know, this horrible grief that is unresolved. But what about before that? And so that's kind of how I feel about Nate in his, like, early characterization. Yeah. Is it's like, we don't have a version of Nate that is, like, we feel empathetic towards. Yeah. We understand that he has been through a really horrifying thing, but we don't really get the opportunity to root for him as an individual. We root for him because we're rooting for the rest of the team. So now I think especially like as the series has gone on and they've sort of let him grow as a character and let him evolve, I think that it's like you can look back at earlier Nate and appreciate the intricacies. And this is actually something you said to me at the time, which is like Nate is more interesting like in retrospect.
Yeah.
But like I definitely agree with that now. I think he's a very fascinating character. You just kind of have to get past the fact that he's just the worst.
Yeah, he's an insufferable twat for the first, like, season and a half, 2 seasons.
And he's very silly. He just doesn't understand things very well. Like, it's very much like everyone else has come to this conclusion a year ago, and Nate's, like, just figuring it out, which is such a funny take considering his whole thing is, like, being smart and on top of it and aware of the whole situation more than anyone else. It's like, but you can't introspect, can you?
So what I really like about this is one of the episodes where I think that Nate is really interesting in a standalone sort of way. Because this episode for me, like, as much as you have, like, the big milestone moments in, like, the season finales and that to kind of touch base with how far Nate has come. At this point, you can look at Nate in this episode and go, oh, season one, Nate would never.
Mm.
Like, this is a Nate who's just having fun. This is a Nate who literally was like, Sophie's up to something. I'm just going to be kind of annoying about it.
Mm.
Like, because obviously he didn't know going into the situation sort of exactly what it was. He just figured, oh, Sophie wants to just go and maybe steal some shit. Sophie's going to, like, do a bit of practice, put in a bit of training, like, have a bit of fun around all of these, like, really easy marks. Like, there's all this art, etc. like that. Obviously, was not expecting to stumble into the situation he stumbled into.
I actually think maybe Nate was just intrigued by the fact that Sophie didn't want to tell him she was going.
Yes.
Because there is theoretically no reason. I mean, obviously we know the reason.
Yeah.
But, like, to Nate's point of view, like, there is no reason why Sophie would want him kept in the dark about this.
Yeah.
So I think it's more of, like, an intrigue of, like, okay, but, like,
Sophie was being kind of weird about that.
Yeah.
Why was she being, like, and especially finding out, like, oh, it was, like, just an art auction, like, there's no reason for Sophie to not just be like, hey, there's this painter that I really like, they're doing.
Yeah, like, no crime, just, no like, crime. Fun just date night, let's go look.
Yeah.
And I think that the other thing there is we had, like, I can't remember what season, maybe, like, three? It was a little while back, but not that far back, where I think Nate was saying, like, Sophie's basically, like, he's basically the only person who Sophie can't lie to, effectively. Yeah. You know?
Actually, I think...
Or was it the other way around?
The first time that we ever see that introduced as, like, a...
concept?
As a concept is in the season one finale, in which he says, like, oh, you can con them, but you can't con me. Because Sophie is trying to go after the extra David for kind of her own personal
vendetta.
Thing. Without explaining the reasons why she specifically wants to hit Blackwell in that way, which then exposes the team to risk. And he does call her out in that episode. So it's really fun to kind of bring back that concept of, like, Sophie can out-con anyone in the team except for Nate.
Yeah.
And his con skills may not compare, but he can always tell when she is using that on them. And, like, to be fair, she's being hella sus. In that first scene where they're, like, doing the murder, and the fact that he's a murder mystery nerd is so fucking funny to me.
It's so Sam Winchester of him, and that's hilarious. But also, alcoholic repressed insurance cops harassing tragically misunderstood femme fatales. Impeccable.
Yeah. And then the way he's like, you're not meant to root for the criminals, and she's like, you always go for the home
team. Yes, I wrote that, like, down too. I loved that. What I was confused about in that scene, though, was why is Nate wearing a jacket that just says Portland? Like, did they just remind the audience? They're like, just in case you forgot, guys, they're in Portland right now. It felt weird. I was like, since when has Nate ever worn something
maybe
like that?
Maybe it's the newest product placement.
Maybe. maybe they're, like, selling merch.
Maybe they got, like, a Tourism Portland, like, deal.
Oh, okay, got you.
To be fair, they'd been filming in Portland since, like, midway through the first season. Like, almost the entirety of this show is filmed in Portland.
So the, like, local council was like, fuck, we got to cash in on this before they leave.
And this, like, season five is the first season where they're actually canonically based out of Portland. They were based out of Boston two to the end of four. And then season one, I think they're actually technically meant to be in, I don't know where they're meant to be in the first season. My knowledge is escaping me on this one. I know, but I don't know, you know?
It's kind of like how the entirety of Supernatural basically was filmed in Canada, but there's only, like, one episode where they're canonically in Canada.
Yeah. So for the final season, they were like, let's stop trying to hide the fact this is Portland and just say we're in Portland. So we get some nice Portland merch there. So maybe, like, genuinely it could be something, you know how, like, certain cities, etc. Like, I know in America, like, Georgia has a really big, like, films Georgia is a big thing. And there's a lot of new media and movies and television and film coming out of Georgia simply because they put film incentives into place. So if you want to film somewhere in America and you decide to film in Georgia, I'm pretty sure there's, like, some sort of tax breaks that you can claim for filming in Georgia.
Oh, interesting.
And there are also, like, grants and all that sort of stuff. So maybe as part of filming in Portland,
they were like, you have to wear our merch.
No, they were more so like, well, we could do tourism. Like,
yeah, they're like, we see your car ads.
Yeah.
We see Microsoft.
Perhaps do one for Portland.
Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Or it could just be like a fun, like they were like, oh, we're going to call out Portland because we've been here so long. Like, we're just
I just think it was a weird, like I thought, regardless of the reasoning, yeah. I thought it was a really weird costuming choice because I was like, this does not feel Nate. Maybe Hardison.
Yeah.
Like, but for Nate, it seemed like an interesting decision.
To be fair though, this is Nate on his day off. Like, I feel like that's the other thing to kind of remember. This,
but we've seen Nate casually before. Like, this isn't like, at no point in five seasons have we ever seen him dressed down. Like, I just, I don't really have a big problem with it. It's just like, it just seemed weird.
Yeah.
It's not his usual attire.
Yeah.
You know? What I will say though, is that I really did not, like, I picked the plot.
Yeah.
It wasn't like super, you know, tricky or whatever. It wasn't the point of the episode to be like, ooh, the plot is so mysterious. Yeah. But I am confused by one thing because I predicted one thing through the whole episode and it never came to pass. Yeah. But the fact that it never came to pass means I have questions. And I don't know if it's just because like they did answer this and I missed it because it's my first pass watching through.
Yeah.
Or if I, otherwise it kind of feels like they cut something.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm intrigued to know if I'm right.
Go for it.
So from the get-go, I was like, oh, something's up with Paolo, right? Yeah. The manservant. Because not only does he like seem really like sus when they're like talking to him, but also they make a point about being like a manservant like two or three separate times. And then when they go to the victims, like the old guy, I can't remember his name. Yeah.
Galt.
Galt. Yes, thank you. Then when they go to Galt's bedroom and they're like looking around and they're like chatting with, I think, the lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
And they point out specifically that it's like reading glasses, but they're on the wrong side of the bed. Like, that's weird. They never come back to that. They also have a whole plot point about how the lawyer was organizing a marriage license, but hadn't actually re-proposed to the ex-wife. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, so him and Paolo, right? I was like, that makes sense. Like, he's his quote, his manservant, sure. Like, they're older. It was a different time. Like, you know, they're keeping things quiet, but there was reading glasses. Like, there was clearly two nightstands in use and he wasn't with the ex-wife. I was like, it makes sense that the manservant's particularly upset. Mm-hmm. Like, and then they're like in his bedroom and they found the painting. I thought the whole, genuinely what I thought was going to happen was that like the guy who passed away, like knew that he was going to pass away kind of thing, didn't want this painting going to his shitty daughter or his like ex-wife or like the lawyer or anything, and was like had just removed it from the vault or given the code to Paolo and been like, I want you to have this because it's my most prized possession. Like, that was my whole thought. And then they just never explained any of those things. Like, they sent
to
No, they don't explain the reading glasses. They don't explain the marriage license.
They explicitly explain both of those things.
When?
So the reading glasses, the reason they go, oh, they're like, oh, reading glasses are on the wrong side of the bed because all of his reading material, all of his books, etc., are on the right side of the bed, but the reading glasses are on the left. So they're like, oh, he's reading something on the left side of the bed. What's he reading? The printer's on the left side of the bed. He's reading the alarm company printout on the left side of the bed, which is why his glasses are there.
Oh.
Yes. And then the marriage license, there was never a marriage license because Schechter didn't want to file it because that would throw the thing into like the whole will into contention.
Mm.
The reason that he said there was a marriage license to Eleanor is because Eleanor walked in on him when he's embezzling money.
Okay. But I was really convinced the whole time. I was like, oh, him and Paolo.
And then the reason that obviously ends up in the bed, under the bed, is because they then use
they frame him.
The forgery to frame him. But no, so that is all 100% explained.
Okay, well then I just wasn't paying enough attention. But
or like you just misunderstood what they said. But no, do those explanations make sense? You don't have any other...
No, they make sense. I'm just annoyed that I didn't hear them.
Yeah. What I will say, and one of my favorite things of this episode, is we get a lot of like little details that just like... When you actually get the reveal, they go, it's a little bit like of an oh moment, like the moment where the son recognizes Sophie and he's like, no, I swear I've met you somewhere before. You're thinking like that's like a bad pickup line or something like that. But then it turns out like the portrait is of her. Like she is.
Oh yeah, that was abundantly obvious from the get-go. Like
she's not, like, and it's just fun because it tells you straight up who the killer is, who stole the painting. And it also tells you why Sophie knows so much about the painting. Mm-hmm. But if you're not necessarily paying attention to that moment,
yeah,
it is the sort of thing that goes kind of like straight over your head because, you know, sometimes you think you recognize someone when you don't.
Yeah. I was like, okay, there's definitely a reason that he is like recognizing her. Like, where did I have my note? I had a note that was like, oh, like maybe has Sophie played him before? Because I originally, my first thought was like, maybe he was an art thief and they had like maybe crossed paths somewhere or she had like played him at like a different, because she seems like she was really trying to like avoid like him seeing her. And so I was like, oh, okay. Like maybe that's where it's going. And then where are we? Like a couple of notes later, I was like, oh, the painting is of her. Like, you know.
There's no reason for her to be so sad when it turns out to be a boring landscape.
Like, yeah. Well, also, like, she kept being like, it's personal.
Yeah.
It's personal. And I was like, okay. You know, like.
Oh, now I can tell you fun. Now that you've seen this episode. So there is a fun take in fandom that Mum is there, which I will say for the longest time I watched this episode, like, a good, like, 24 times. Because I really enjoy this episode. I go back to it quite often. I've watched this episode probably a good 24 times and it took me about 12.5 times to realize I was saying ma mystère, as in like my mystery in French. I always misheard it as ma mystère. And I was like, what the fuck does that mean? Like, what the hell is that? But there is a fun fandom theory that now ma mystère hangs next to Old Nate.
Yeah, I was thinking that actually when they took it. I was like, oh, perfect. Now they have a matching set.
Matching set.
Yeah.
You know, like they've... Sophie's got a nude portrait of her from when she was like, she must be like 18, 19, 20.
Yeah.
Like very early 20s or very late teens. Like, I don't think she's under 17 and I don't think she's over like 23.
Well, I would be shocked if they had included it if she was a minor.
Yeah. is the key things there. So, and then Nate obviously just has Old Nate, which was lovingly painted by Hardison.
Mm. Yes, no, it was very fun. One thing that I did really like about Sophie this episode is that specifically Nate is like talking about the wine. He's like, oh, is it German? She's like, no, it's New Zealand. And I was like, oh my God, shout out. And also, yes, Gina. Like, because I was like, oh, that's really fun. Like, as much as we very, very rarely get like Australian mentions, we even more rarely get New Zealand mentions. And it's so nice because both Australia and New Zealand, not that I actually don't drink at all, but like, are like so well renowned for wine specifically. Like literally we went to Paris and they had Australian wines from like not that far from us on the menu. And we were like, why did we pay so much to come here? But like, you know, it, so it's nice to be like, yeah, like we got a little nod.
It's like a little nod. And you know that it was built in there because of course Gina Bellman is a Kiwi.
Yeah.
So.
Although what I will say is her spit take was not amazing. Like I love her. It was not her best work. Oh, one thing that was confusing to me, not really a complaint, just confusing, is that every single time they introduced the lawyer for like the first two or three times, they kept being like the family lawyer. And I was like, you can just use his name. Like you've already introduced him once, like formally, like we know now.
We know he's a lawyer. You don't need to, like, remind us every time. He's a lawyer.
Mm.
But did you know he's a lawyer? But maybe, just maybe, he's a lawyer. I think it's more so for, like, because obviously this is framed through, like, a murder mystery sort of lens.
Oh, my God, yes. There was a moment where someone, maybe someone else, oh, actually, do you know what Sterling says, like, check the billiards room. And I was like, oh, my God, like, Cluedo?
My favorite moment, and you can tell that they included the entire character of the butler just for the moment where Sophie says, the butler did it.
Yeah.
She is living her best life in that moment. I think that is like totally slay of her.
Yeah.
Like she's just having fun. She's having fun. She's vibing. And I think that is her girl bossing her way through life. And I support it.
One thing that was a little bit, or seems a little odd to me, and like I get why she did it, but every time, like when Sophie was interviewing suspects with Sterling and she used like a different alias and like a different personality for each like person, I understand why, because she's using the personality that she thinks will be most likely to get the other person to trust her and speak to her.
Yeah.
But I was also like, this is not going to work out well if you run into, say, two of these people at any given time.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like you're going to meet them once and then never interact with them again. You're all hanging out in the same fucking house.
Like, look, logistically, doesn't really work. But vibes-wise, impeccable.
Mm.
And I'm personally willing to forgive the fact that this could go so very wrong. just for the fact that every single time she manages to make her aliases bully Sterling just a little bit. That fucking one where she's like talking to the ex-wife and she's like, I just hope me and my Chauncey, and you know she does it just so that she can fucking like ruffle his hair and like sit on his lap and like mess with him just like a little bit.
But the thing is about that, like, who does the ex-wife think that Sterling is? Like, surely she knows he's Interpol. Every fucking other person knew he was Interpol. And, like, yeah, they make a thing about, like, her drinking the whole time or whatever. But, yeah. Like, surely. Like, and, like, what gives Sophie license to interview her in that particular, like, and I mean, I guess that it could be framed as, like, oh, she was just striking up casual conversation. Yeah. But, like, I don't know, man.
It's a little hella sus, bro.
Yeah, just a little. Speaking of hella sus,
yeah,
you know how I feel about people from Leverage yelling in crowded areas about their secret doings. Fucking Nate leading Sophie away from the scene of the crime through a crowded corridor and literally being like, you're an art thief. You stole it. I know you stole it.
Ex-art thief.
Oh my God. You know, I was like, why is he literally just saying this shit out loud in a crowded corridor after a painting just got stolen and they are literally leaving the scene of the crime?
And he's literally saying like, you know, luckily nobody here knows, like if somebody here who did know that you were an art thief, you'd be in trouble, like Sterling. And then Sterling obviously shows
up. Yeah. I'm like, yeah, sure. But there are other ways you could have set that up without saying to a room full of people, hey, this woman's an ex-art thief. Like, and he's like dragging her from the scene. I'm like, Nate, nothing in life could have looked more suspicious than what you just did. But then of course we have them interacting with Sterling and, you know, he's saying like, oh, my Interpol thing that I just established. And like, oh, we should have sent a card. And Nate being like, you don't have any evidence. And I know that must be very annoying. So fucking funny. Or Sophie saying, I'm Nate Ford. Something's going on that isn't about me and I can't have that. Hilarious read from her.
Yeah.
Sophie's been on point with her reads this episode. I will give her that much.
I really enjoy watching them have fun. So this episode where they're like, yeah, no, we're going to have fun and we're going to bully Sterling just like a little bit. Iconic of them. I have no complaints, which is why I love this episode so much. Because is it like a typical episode of Leverage? No. Do I miss the rest of the team? Absolutely. Do I also just really very much enjoy watching Sophie and Nate having a vibe and bullying Sterling for 45 minutes? Abso-fucking-lutely. Like, I'm never going to get tired of this shit. Like, they could serve this dish up 2 million ways and I'm always going to be excited. They're just having fun. They're bullying Sterling. They're forcefully third-wheeling him at every opportunity, which is just iconic of them. They're being like, oh, I can see that you're currently trying to interview us. However, we're going to just, like, have a little sidebar real quick while you just stand there to the side. So fucking funny. This entire thing of, like, you know, Nate being like, oh, so that's your case. And Sterling being like, oh, you mean the fact that I found it in his possession, this, that, the other. Oh, you just want me to see it fall apart in his technicality. And he's like, that sort of level of playing each other. But I also think that it's really fun because this is the first time we've seen Nate play Sterling or Sterling play Nate in such a way where it's like, it's kind of just for the funsies.
Yeah, they're both on the same team. I quite liked that at the end he says, like, I'm hiring, you know, you can both, you know. And I kind of like that. And it does make me wonder, you know, I said the whole season, like, they're just going to retire. Like, that's just the way that it's winding down. And if that is not what happens, I'll fucking eat a stupid hat on, you know, Nate's behalf. But I'm like, I could see them, like, you know, working with Sterling again.
Yeah.
Not necessarily permanently, but I could definitely see them coming on as, like, consultants kind of thing. And I think that it would be a very fun kind of, like if Sterling is ever, like, truly stumped.
Yeah.
I think it would be a really fun dynamic. And I like that they've left it kind of open for that possibility because I do think it's sort of, it's a fun little thing in the sandbox, you know. Yeah. Sterling's just like an extra shovel just in there that you can use if you want, but you don't have to. And actually what I really liked this episode was we had Sophie talking about like whether or not Nate would be able to outsmart Sterling. And Nate said, no, I can't outsmart Sterling, but he can't outsmart me either. And I really liked that sort of verbal acknowledgement of what we've really known since season one, which is that they are just so well matched.
Yeah. Which is Sterling's like Nate, but evil.
Well, see, I don't necessarily think that. I think
no.
Sterling is like kind of lawful neutral kind of thing. But I think that the two of them working together has never really made sense to me until this episode.
Yeah.
Like, in this episode, I can see how that, like, antagonistic dynamic could actually function to serve a purpose that, like a common goal.
Yeah.
Versus, like, they're both trying to achieve other things.
Mm.
So that was, like, that was nice and that was fun.
And we also get confirmation from Sophie this week that Nate and Sterling did used to be partners, which is like, I don't know how, and he goes, oh, he's funny in his own way, which is very funny to me, that line personally. I really enjoy the fact that we seem to be getting, they're no longer antagonistic. And I think it's really important that this week, basically Nate brings up the fact that Sterling does still actually technically owe Nate a favor from the time where they almost killed Nate and his team in Dubai.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's really interesting that we finally get like the payoff for that here. We get the whole idea of like, oh, well, the favor is that I'm not arresting you without cause and throwing you in secret prison, which is such a Sterling level favor. Like, I don't think anyone else counts that as a favor, dude.
Yeah.
I think that's just basic justice process. Like,
yeah,
that's just the way the judicial system functions.
Mm-hmm.
Is you need evidence.
Yeah.
To be able to throw people in prison.
One of the other things that I think this episode was, like, interesting
is
that when Sterling, like, accuses the curator and she, like, just fucking bolts out of there, right? And he's like, I didn't think it would work. And I was like, babe, if you didn't think it would work, why did you do it? Like, what were you possibly hoping to achieve if you did not think that would achieve anything? Like, what was the point? Just the fucking drama of it all?
I personally think that what he was hoping for was for her to, like, crack a little bit. I think what he was looking to do is, like, throw her off balance so that he could take advantage of it. What he was not expecting was for her to bolt out the door.
But, like, he also, like, it wasn't, like, him subtly being like, oh, let me sort of pepper you with these, like, little details. He was like, let me just show you my entire hand. And then she just fucking legged it. And actually, one thing that I think the episode really sort of skipped over is the fact that she was fully murdered.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like that was barely addressed.
Yeah.
And considering Leverage is not a murder show, in fact, I think this may be the first on-screen murder we've had in the whole series because...
Yeah, we've seen murdered people on screen before, but I don't think we've actually seen the murder process.
Yes. And I feel like it was just so barely addressed. And I was like, obviously this woman had done, like, the crimes, but she, like...
Of the people who have done... This was not a fate
that she fucking deserved. Like...
Of the people that have also done the crimes, I would argue that she's actually more innocent than the son. Like, if that makes... Like,
oh, yeah, obviously.
Of the pair of them, she was kind of in a position where she was taken advantage of because she was lonely and she was kind of desperate.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I mean, regardless of, like, their motivations.
She didn't come up with the whole criminal scheme. She didn't decide, like...
Yeah, but she still chose to go along
with it. She aided and abetted. She was not the mastermind behind it.
Yeah. That's not, I suppose, really my point. Mm. I think my point is that she was callously murdered. And, like, they barely take a second to... acknowledge that. And to be fair, they don't spend that much time on the fact that the actual, like, original guy was murdered either. Like, it's like a subplot. And to the point where they actually kind of point out that it's a subplot.
When, like, Nate says, who's talking about a murder? We're looking at not theft.
Yeah, it's like the murder's not important. You know, and so, like, I guess that it's sort of on brand in that sense, but just it was very bizarre to me in an episode, like I said, like, of Leverage that doesn't really feel like an episode of Leverage, to see a woman just absolutely bludgeoned to death.
Full murdered and then framed to make it look like an accident.
Yeah. And also the way he was just scraping the blood off a brick onto the ground. Like, I'm sorry.
The one thing that's always gotten me about that bit of the episode is how far behind was, like, Sterling and Nate when they were running? Because, like, she didn't get that much of a head start.
No.
Like, and for him to have time to be, like, standing that, like...
For her to have the, like, two sentences of dialogue or whatever, and him grab the brick and clobber her and scrape it onto the ground and run away, it's just not adding up.
Like,
I'm not good at math.
How out of shape are Nate and Sterling for the 10-second head start to turn into, like, a 30-second to a minute head start? Like, You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I don't know. And I also just feel like they were very quick to assume that she'd slipped and hit her head.
Yeah.
Like, okay, sure.
Bit sus, bro.
Yeah, I don't know. Something about that particular death. It may also be that she was the only person of color, basically, in the whole episode, and she existed to be manipulated and then murdered.
Yeah.
Like, didn't love that, you know? And so, yeah, I don't know. It just didn't sit well with me. And again, like, it's not something that Leverage would normally do. So no. It just felt very off.
So I revisit this episode a lot just because it's a fun nothing episode. Like, I'm watching.
It doesn't require much emotional investment or like brain power.
No emotional investment, no brain power required. Like, I can chuck this on and just vibe with Sophie being absolutely flawless and Sterling just being kind of pissy the entire time. Like, that is a vibe for me. Like, I am just enjoying myself, living my best life, watching them annoy this like middle-aged man. Like, that is so inherently fun to me. Like, I just, the way they're like, let's pause this like otherwise very serious interrogation where you're accusing me of this like massive crime, to be like, well, I couldn't even hide a napkin in this dress. Like, I don't have it on me, obviously. And he's like, well, no, obviously you don't have it on you. It's like, okay. And then they move on from that. And then he's like, you know, as you know, art theft is an $8 million a year industry.
And I love when they drop stats and statistics. Like, yeah, took science to me.
And then I also love like the little tiny detail of every single member of Sterling's team is a woman.
Yeah, I like that too, actually.
It's like this team that he's created is full of women.
What's really entertaining to me about it is that this is specifically a Supernatural thing, but like the outfits that they're dressed in is giving heaven corporate culture. And so having Crowley, surrounded by these like sort of angels standing, I'm like, wow, this is really fun. Like, this is just like, for me personally, this is fun.
Yeah. Like, that's a treat they put in there for you specifically, though. And even going through to, like, Nate messing with Sterling about, like, well, that's all the evidence you got. Like, are you sure? And then you've got the entire, like, reoccurring bit through the episode of, like, you just want to know how, like, I found out where you were. And, like, he's like, oh, well, it was the shoes. And, like, I think it's just built in such a, like, fun, clever, lighthearted way that it's a really easy episode to just kind of, like, vibe to, which... I'm a vibey sort of person. I like to vibe to my TV shows, which is why when a TV show doesn't connect with me, it really normally doesn't connect with me. Because if the vibes are off, I'm out. Like, I don't give a shit if the vibes are off.
But it also has to be very specifically the vibe that you're looking for.
Yes, yes. And I want to be clear here. Just because I think the vibes are off, that means the vibes are off to my very specific personal taste. It does not mean the vibes are off and this is a terrible piece of media that's irredeemable in every way and has no positive attributes. Except for in the case of Supernatural.
Oh, you know what?
That was a joke, clearly.
Jamie's like, for legal reasons.
For legal reasons, that was a joke. Because
I don't want Beth to kill me.
But, like, yeah, like, I am all about the vibes and this is just, it's so different and so fun. I would argue, because this is kind of like, I know last season we had the Girls Night Out, Boys Night In job. This is kind of the equivalent. In the same way, like, the Van Gogh job and the D.B. Cooper job are the equivalents.
Do you know what's really interesting for me is that, like, I understand what you're saying about, like, it being, like, different and being fun. I actually think that that's where the vibes are off for me. Like, because you're right, I think this is a fun episode, but I think that it would have been really fun to have the other three in on it. Yeah. And, like, you would have had to have a more complicated plot.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, to have the three. And actually, one thing I will say is having these two episodes where you have fewer cast members and therefore fewer, like, intricate moving points has made the actual plot, like, I've said before and I stand by it, like, Leverage is like watching a 2-hour movie condensed into 35 minutes.
Yeah.
And it can be a lot sometimes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, they just have to get through so much fucking shit. And I personally think that sometimes it just doesn't pay off. Like, I think personally the pilot is an example of where I don't think it pays off. I think there's too much happening. It just fucks the pacing. Like, and as an audience member, particularly as someone who's watching it for the first time, you just cannot take it all in and appreciate it because it's just like sensory overload.
Yeah.
But for like these two episodes, I suddenly am like really noticing the lack.
Yeah.
And I think it's because I'm so used to having so much happening and I'm so used to being like aware of where all the cast members are and like what they're doing that now I'm like, I watch this and I'm like, this episode felt like nothing happened.
Yeah.
And like that's, it's just a normally paced piece of media. It's just that compared to what it normally is, I'm like, it's just missing something. And with like the boys' night in Girls' Night Out jobs, there was so much happening and there was that little bit of overlap and we had extra characters moved in. Like we had Tara and we had, I forget his name, but the Australian robber or whatever.
Mattingly.
You know, and we had these extra characters. We had Hardison checking in over the phone. Like we had Peggy, we had Hurley. Like, and they were so fast paced and so much was still happening in those episodes that I didn't feel like I was missing the other team members as much. And then these two episodes, like, not to say that nothing was happening last episode, a lot was happening, but like it was just different. And I think it's just, yeah, I don't know. For me, the vibes are off in this episode, but they're off because they're not the vibes I'm expecting.
Yeah.
You know?
And that's what I was kind of going into. Like, this is kind of the equivalent of like the Girls' Night Out, Boys' Night In job in the same vein that the DB Cooper job is the Van Gogh job of this season. But I think the Girls' Night Out, Boys' Night In job does better as a like a duo of episodes than the rundown job versus the frame up job is just in the fact that the episodes are more strongly interconnected.
Yeah.
Like last week's episode, the rundown job, we get absolutely no context for why Sophie and Nate aren't there.
Yeah.
Other than they just kind of weren't needed for what was necessary. So they just weren't there. And then at the start of this episode, all we get is the implication that they've decided to stay in DC.
These two things are happening
simultaneously. That these two things are happening simultaneously.
But also like the thing is about like the Girls' Night Out, Boys' Night In, it still felt like leverage.
Yes.
I would say, for me at least, neither of these two episodes have felt like leverage. They just feel different. Mm-hmm. And I cannot put my finger on it.
Yeah.
But they just, like, I'm putting it up there with the ho-ho-ho job. These two episodes in the ho-ho-ho job, to me, aren't canon. They just don't count because I cannot, like, obviously they are. But, like, you know, they just don't fit nicely.
Yeah. They're
like jigsaw pieces that, like, feel squished, you know?
And where the other point that I want to say, the other real key point of difference between these ones is last week's episode, we have basically no new characters to fill the void of the other.
Except that one cop.
Team members. Except for that one, like, Homeland Security agent or whatever the fuck. Like, I think his name's Casey or something. Like
Elliot's ex-military friend.
Elliot's ex-military friend is the only kind of additional cast member we get.
And he's not even fun, in my opinion.
And he's not in a lot of the episode. And I think here we get Sterling kind of replacing, so he's still got a trio of characters. But the Girls' Night Out job, we have Peggy, who's a pretty integral part, Tara, Sophie, Parker, and Mattingly. That's five main characters still of that episode. And Boys' Night Out job, we get the addition of Hurley plus the three main guys. Plus, we get a little bit of, like, Banana, etc. So it still feels like you have five main characters.
And even in that episode, we have the fun villains as well. Like, the guys standing outside the church. Like, that banter is so much more interesting than anything that was happening in, like, this equivalent. Yeah.
So it goes holy ground, the basement, holy ground.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know? And even in this particular episode, like, it was about art.
Yeah.
Maggie could have been here.
Yeah.
It would have made sense. Sterling could have brought her in as an expert, like, at some point. And then there you go. There's immediately an easy way to introduce another character that would have been a really fun dynamic.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, because you just kind of get used to having, like, a five main character show that to be reduced to three main characters, also simplifying the plot.
Well, in this particular instance, I don't even think you could say three main characters because Sterling is only in, like, one maximum two episodes in a season and we've got a whole season where he's never there at all. Like, I really think that only Nate and Sophie were main characters this episode, and like, I like Nate and Sophie, I think they're an interesting duo, but their dynamic is not what I'm invested in the show. And so, like, having it really only be those two, and like, I love their dynamic with Sterling, but it feels empty. They are incomparable to me because the other two are such high caliber that comparing them to these two is just like, what's that meme where it's just like, oh my God, Beyonce, I can't believe he would ever compare that to you. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's how I feel.
Yeah. And so for me, like, one of the things that I think really does a disservice to like last week's episode and this week's episode, at least like in my brain when I'm thinking about them combined, is the fact that we've already had this essential concept.
Done better.
Done so well. Done in such a fun way. Done in such a way that really, that felt like it was an intentional choice rather than what I feel like this week and last week feel a lot more like, oh, well, we could only get certain actors available on certain days versus last one where it's like, oh, we've got a concept that we want to try. You know, it feels a lot less organic. It feels more like, oh, well, the scheduling kind of forced us to do this. Mm. So it's just like, it's an interesting set of episodes. And I certainly think of the two, this week's is like the stronger one, which is a spicy hot take in fandom. People absolutely love last week's episode.
No,
It's like the vibes are off in both episodes, except for the vibes are off this week in a fun way. And so I much prefer this episode to last week's.
I agree to an extent. I think this episode honestly was kind of fine. I think it was pretty mid, to be honest, comparative to like the rest of Leverage. I think this episode was mid. But personally, I think last week's episode was kind of bad.
Yeah.
So like I still prefer this one.
Yeah.
But I don't have like, oh my God, I adore it kind of attitude either. I just think it was kind of fine. Honestly, if like Sterling hadn't been in it, I would have been like,
yeah.
Okay, what was the point of this 40 minutes?
And honestly, Mark Shepherd's presence alone may be the thing that's responsible for a lot of my affection for this week's episode.
Yeah.
Like, it could literally just be the fact that I got Mark Shepherd on my screen for a good portion of this episode.
Well, and also I just think that they have a very, as like a trio, those three actors have a very fun, like, banter kind of against each other. I think that it works out really nicely. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I just, yeah, I don't really feel very strongly about this one really either way. I think I would rewatch it.
Yeah.
There are certainly episodes of Leverage where I would have like, I think would be less inclined to rewatch than this one. But this is not high up there for me.
Mm-hmm. Do you have anything else you'd like to add on this one specifically?
I don't think so. Like, I think we basically kind of said it all. Honestly, like there's really not a lot to say about this one outside of like the production stuff.
Yeah.
Because the actual plot is kind of...
Yeah. Though I really did enjoy like the kind of like direction, and they lean really heavily into murder mystery tropes, which I just think is kind of generally fun. And I think they're mostly used effectively. So
it was kind of giving like Knives Out energy, but like watered down Knives Out, you know?
Yeah. Knives Out, but make it Leverage.
Knives Out, but make it watered down Leverage, because like I still don't think it felt like Leverage to me personally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, lovely. So how would you rate the Frame-Up job out of 5?
I gave it a 3.5. But honestly, now that I'm looking at that, I'm wondering if it's too generous. I gave last week's episode a 2.5 on the basis that it's not Leverage and therefore I can't compare it against the rest of Leverage. This week's episode felt more like Leverage, but I still think it's fundamentally not really Leverage.
Yeah.
I genuinely think it must just come down to like the cast dynamic and needing, for me, just all 5 of them being involved is how Leverage is.
You need at least one shot of each of the cast members on screen.
Yeah.
Because even like the Broken Wing job, she touches base with every other cast member at some point of it. And Girls Night Out, Boys Night In job, they both start and end the episode together as a team.
I think, and this checks in through the apps, I think maybe I want your opinion on this.
Okay.
And I know that you love this episode, so I'm going to ask you to try not to be too biased. I kind of want to give it a 3 with a 0.5 being just Mark Shepherd.
Yeah.
But I did enjoy this episode at a base level more than last week's. So should I give it a 0.5 for that and then an additional 0.5 for Mark Shepherd, giving the total 3.5 out of 5?
So if we start with the same baseline of 2.5, just because...
Not really Leverage.
Not really Leverage. I think this week... Honestly, like, I would give Mark Shepherd just an entire extra point to himself. Like, just personally for me, like, Mark Shepherd is one of those actors where it's like, I see him on my screen, I'm like, oh, this is immediately better.
Yeah, but I can't just be like, I'm not ranking Mark Shepherd.
To be fair, I have 100% given Mark Shepherd an entire extra point on the other podcast. Yeah. So,
I think...
Like, I'm biased. Like, I think it's definitely, I think it's definitely worth at least a 3.5. And I do understand your point of like, it doesn't really feel like Leverage because you don't have the whole team there. And it's also like, they have leaned into a genre, which also kind of moves it out of that Leverage sort of territory. But it is still a very fun episode. So.
Okay. I think I'm going to give it a 3. And my reasoning is as follows. 2.5 is a base.
Yeah.
Because just sort of, like, literally middle of the road, halfway between 0 and 5. Yeah. I'm going to give it half a mark for Mark Sheppard. Mm-hmm. I would give it a whole mark. A mark for Mark. Yeah. Except that I think that some of the, like, the vibes between Sterling, Nate, and Sophie mm-hmm. were great. But I think that some of the stuff between Nate and Sophie, because they were playing it up, because the, like, metaphorical yeah. kids weren't around, doesn't, it just didn't mm-hmm. hit for me yeah. so much. And so I think that that's kind of, I'm going to, like, pull that back a little yeah. bit. And also the fucking thing where he's walking around saying she's a fucking art thief, and it's just like, for fuck's sake, man. And also the murder that didn't sit right with me. Like, I don't, I'm going to give it a 3.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with my gut. I'm going to give it a 3.
Okay.
And, you know, if people disagree with me, that's fine.
I'll accept it reluctantly.
Yeah. Look, media's subjective. We're all going to have a different opinion. But I think that's, I think I'm happy with that. The rating.
The next week's episode is called The Low, Low Price Job. So what do you think it's about?
Down, down, prices are down.
So you think they're taking on Coles?
I hope they are.
Okay.
This week, the leverage team takes on price gouging. no. I don't know. The low, low price. I mean, I assume that it will probably some kind of... Do you remember... Oh, my God. What was that? There's like a jingle that I remember from when I was a kid, but I can't remember what the actual business name was. Mm. And it's like, hey, Joe, how do you keep the prices so low? It's secondhand. Well, you wouldn't know. And I don't know what it's from, but it's so like ingrained in my memory.
It was an appliance store.
Yeah, like white goods.
That sold like dinged up stuff.
Yeah, like washing machines and it's like Godfrey's. Why was the guy's name Joe? Like, that's really specific. Was it like maybe just a... Oh, okay. So it was a local ad. Anyway. So maybe it's like secondhand, like sort of,
yeah.
not like upcycling, mm-hmm. but you know how, oh my God, you know in Matilda?
Yeah.
When her dad is doing that thing where he like uses the drill to reverse the odometer in the car so they look like they haven't driven as far as they have, like that kind of dodgy sort of practice. Like, I wonder if it's some sort of like version of that where basically they're taking something in which like isn't like... they've done cars a few times, so maybe it's not like roadworthy sort of thing, but like they're using some sort of like product or appliance and they are taking it secondhand or whatever, or taking it once it's been totaled and then like reselling it even though it's not yeah. safe, and they can afford to do it at a low, low price, you mm-hmm. know, like basically selling a lemon even though you yeah. know, you know, that it's going to be fucked.
So dodgy homewares.
Maybe. I mean, like the low, low price, like... I don't know. It could be the low price of fucking anything, I suppose. But it could also be like metaphorical. It
doesn't some sort of literal. Retail, maybe.
Yeah, you know, it could be like, I don't know. Yeah, that's what I'm going with. Because it literally, the thing with leverage is it could be very literal or it could be completely mm-hmm. fucking abstract. And there is like no way to fucking know. So I'm going to take it literally and I'm going to say that it's like a low, low price from like an on sale sort mm-hmm. of retail outlet.
All right. Lovely. Well, thank you so much for joining us. If you want to join us again next week, we'd absolutely love that. In the meantime, if you want to chat to us at all, you can talk to us about literally anything. But suggested conversation topics do include...
Of the two episodes, this week's and last week's, do you have a strong opinion on favourites? Mm. Because Jamie keeps telling me that this is like a hot take in fandom, you yeah. know, it's like opinions on these episodes. And honestly, that surprises me. Because as much as like I personally didn't love them... I wouldn't have expected it to be like a hot button topic.
Yeah.
You know? Like Leverage to me, it's not like Supernatural. No. Like Supernatural, there's some hot fucking takes. Yeah. But Leverage to me has always felt like, and to be fair, I've never really been immersed in the fandom, but sort of just generally as a media, it feels pretty consistent. Like you yeah. don't have too many ups and downs in terms of like...
It almost feels more chill in terms of like a fandom yeah. experience. There's...
You're not playing 8D chess with Leverage. Yeah, see,
I feel like you're less likely to walk into the Leverage fandom with the I can fix him mentality.
Yeah. There's no epic highs and lows to yeah. Leverage. It's just kind of a baseline, you know, consistent.
It feels like a good fandom to just be like, oh, I'm just like chilling.
This is like the difference between me. I like Leverage. I mm. like Leverage. I don't have brainworms about Leverage. Mm. You know, I'm not like fanatic about yeah. Leverage. And I think that's why. Like, mm. it's just like baseline good.
Yeah.
You know? And so...
It's a fun time. It's an enjoyable time. We're out here chilling.
So it's interesting to me that, like, these two episodes are what has, like, people up in arms. So, like,
mm.
I'm interested. Like, if you disagree with me, that's totally fine. You know, that's very valid. But, like, if you love one of these two episodes, yeah. let me know why. Or if you hate one of these two episodes or both of these episodes,
yeah.
let me know why. Because I feel like it's very... It's not very often that we have heavily debated...
It's not often preferences. I come into these recordings and I go, hey, Beth, just a warning, this is going to be a can of worms. And I will say, I think your take on this episode is a lot more in line with the fandom's take than my take on this episode.
Okay.
Where we deviate really significantly from, like, general fandom experience. Like,
this last week's episode?
Yeah. General fandom opinion, or at least in my experience, because obviously, like, I don't, like, I just chill out in the fandom. Like, I'm not really too active a member other than creating and recording and releasing this podcast. I think, yeah, like, last week's episode is where we really differ from the main. But, yeah, I just want to know, because obviously I have differing opinions to fandom. I don't think it's at all uncommon to have, like, opinions that don't perfectly line up with fandom opinion. But I certainly think in this regard, my opinion, like, does veer slightly, if not severely, to the left.
I don't know, Jamie. Maybe lots of people have this opinion and they've just been too scared to voice it because of big fandom.
Please, dear God, if somebody else feels the same way about these two episodes, let me know, because I think in fandom generally, it is framed a lot as, like, of these last two episodes, of this kind of, like, two-part episode thing, that this is the problem child episode. And I don't think it is.
Mm-hmm. I think also interesting, and this is, like, getting kind of maybe a little off the point, but it's still tangentially relevant. I think that what's really interesting with the concept of fandom is that I think that it's very easy for, like, a small group of people's opinions to become accepted as the broader landscape's opinions. And it really comes down to, like, I think not so much nowadays, I don't think it is so prevalent, but, like, you know, maybe in the last sort of 10 years ago, sort of when we were, like, teenagers and first really, like, entering, like, the Tumblr space and stuff, the concept of, like, big name fans and, like, their opinions somehow having more weight or merit than just the general viewer. And, like, you know, you could argue that some people have, like, put more thought or less thought into, like, media analysis when it comes to any media. But, you know, ultimately, it's subjective. And there's, like, good faith interpretation and poor faith interpretation. But, like, I think that it's really interesting to be like, oh, like, collectively, as a fandom, this was the opinion. Because it is really using general, broad strokes. And oftentimes it comes back to, who were the most popular voices in fandom and what did they think at the time? And then how did that colour opinion? Or, like, what did one actor say at a con that then informed this entire thought process? And so it's fascinating to, like, think about how that all kind of comes about as well. So anyway, that's just sort of like an additional.
Irregardless, thank you so much for joining us today. Have a lovely evening, night, lunch, brunch, 4 a.m., 2 a.m., 3 a.m., 1 a.m., 12 p.m. I don't know. I'm just saying.
We don't know your fucking life.
We don't know your fucking life. If it is past, like, 10 p.m., maybe consider going to bed. That is the dream for Beth, but she can't sleep, so she's not having it currently. Anyway, thank you so much for joining us. Bye.